Welcome to Journeys Through Pulmonary Fibrosis, a podcast produced by Boehringer Ingelheim. I'm Steve Jones. I'm an IPF patient. I lived with the disease for 8 years before having a lung transplant a few years ago. I'm also the president of the European Pulmonary Fibrosis Federation, a grouping of 22 patient organizations from many countries across Europe. And I'm also associated with Action for Pulmonary Fibrosis in the UK. In today's episode, I'm joined by three brilliant guests, and we're going to focus on a number of topics. We're going to focus on patient organizations, on hope, on resilience, and on how we generally improve our well-being while living with this terrible and devastating disease. So maybe if I could ask you each to introduce yourselves. Perhaps, Jen, you'd like to start.
Sure. Thank you, Steve. My name is Jennifer Wesko. I'm the executive director of Wesko Foundation for Pulmonary Fibrosis. We are a nonprofit organization that is very deeply woven in our mission that my dad, Ron Wesko, had idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. And so it's very heartfelt, yet extremely motivating in working with patients and families and navigating this disease. And so it's a pleasure to be here today.
Great. Nurjana, would you like to go next?
Yes, I'm Nurjana Bruggeman from the Netherlands, and I was diagnosed with systemic sclerosis at the age of 22 and also with PF, pulmonary fibrosis, unfortunately. But I'm still here.
Yes.
Great. That's good, Nurjana.
Yeah.
Pleasure to have you with us. Mm-hmm. And Monica, if you'd like to.
Yes, I'm Monica Holmer from Sweden. I work with and started the Swedish Association for Scleroderma. I have had scleroderma for about 17 years.
Okay, great. So we have both, two of us around the table have an IPF history and two of us a scleroderma ILD history. I mean, what's strange when, I found strange that I got to know the disease better, if you like, from having it and from meeting people, is how many different communities we come from. Mm-hmm. We have the pure pulmonary fibrosis, the scleroderma, also rheumatoid arthritis. You know, there are so many ways in which people end up with lung fibrosis. But let's move forward. Nurjana, I find it really, you know, well, for me, it would be shocking to be diagnosed with a disease like this at the age of 22. What was that like, and what impact has it had on your life and your relationships with friends and family?
Tremendously. I was devastated, heartbroken, scared, anxiety. And when you're at the age of 22, you're going to college or you have to go to work. But for me, it was surviving. And I was so afraid to die.
Yeah. And did your family and friends rally around and help you?
I was very lucky. My husband, it was a strange beginning, but when I was hospitalized, he was sitting at my bed. We knew each other from work. And from that on, we were colleagues. He stayed with me and took care of me. And I've got very much support also from my parents. And that's so important to have a support system.
Yeah. Yeah, I often think it must be terrible to try and live with one of these diseases without support.
Yeah, I could not imagine if you don't have support.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. No. That's true. Monica, your situation was slightly different, if I understand. You were diagnosed, you had a problem becoming diagnosed, getting a diagnosis.
Yes.
And that must have been an incredibly anxious time for you.
Yes.
So knowing what was wrong.
Yeah, it was a really long journey. I did not that I shouldn't have done. I Googled, so I think I had the diagnosis before my doctor. I had to be asking for a second opinion. It took about 7 years to get properly diagnosed. Mm-hmm. Yes, in the first I was exactly like you, Nurjana. I was devastating, anxious, but with a diagnosis, some feeling of a little bit calmer, learning to know more things.
It has a name.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It has a name.
And it has a community attached to the name now, which I think is also part of it, isn't it?
Yes.
There are people who, I know when I first went into a support group, I was 6 years into my disease, And I suddenly found myself in a room full of other people. And I thought, everybody in this room understands me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time that had happened. So I think having the name and knowing what you've got is so important. Yeah. And Jennifer, I mean, you were similar, but as a carer, in that your dad, Ron, was diagnosed when you were still, you know, quite young.
Relatively. I was in my early 30s. Yeah. It was the very typical journey of someone who is having all of these symptoms and not understanding what is happening, and took quite a while, over 3 years, to get diagnosed. Constantly went back to his PCP and primary care physician, okay, GP, yeah. Mm-hmm. And missed and underdiagnosed, the typical story that we've all experienced to some level. And we just couldn't figure out what was happening, and then finally was referred to a pulmonologist, and then he had a lung biopsy and was properly diagnosed. And we felt the same way. We just didn't understand what was happening, and as a family and as a daughter of someone living with pulmonary fibrosis, you realize of the sensitivity of many things that come with that, and it was very, very difficult. And we honestly felt like we were the only family that was dealing with pulmonary fibrosis. And you had mentioned about interstitial lung disease. And so we're focusing on IPF. And then I started hearing about scleroderma sarcoidosis and other interstitial lung disease. And you realize you are not the only person, and you are not the only family. And so you realize there is a huge community out there that is, we understand each other very tacitly. Mm-hmm. We don't have to say anything. And exactly what you've experienced, Stephen, we all have in a supportive care type of situation, that we are in a group of like-minded folks that really understand what our journey is. All very unique, all very unique, but also that just commonality among all of us. Yeah.
We need a word, I think, for experiencing life the same way, in a way, because we're all coming very different. We don't suffer with the multi-system or multi-organ problems that a person with scleroderma has, but the fibrosis, we all experience that the same way, irrespective of the cause of it. Mm-hmm. So that brings us together as quite a big, and I hope one day, powerful community.
Yes.
So one question I was going to ask you as well, actually, Jen, is that when was your dad diagnosed?
He was diagnosed in November of 2003, and 11 months later, on October 29th at 10:06 a.m., he succumbed to this disease.
Oh, really?
We certainly didn't realize of the magnitude that he was about to encounter. It was, and I'm sure we all can attest to this, it's a level of denial when we go through this grieving process of our life before our scleroderma pulmonary fibrosis diagnosis, going through that grieving. And one of them, as we know, is denial and not realizing the magnitude of what one goes through, and their care partners and their families. I look back and hoping, or not wishing, but looking back of what we do now, of talking with care partners and saying, you know, they are heroes. Care partners are heroes in our world and in all of our worlds. And to have that level of support is instrumental. But a care partner goes through their own unique experience of their loved one going through just tremendous journey that one goes through. Care partner goes through our own unique journey.
Indeed, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, back then, I mean, I know I was diagnosed in 2008. Mm-hmm. And honestly, there was nothing.
No.
Then there was no drugs. Mm-hmm. There were no clinical trials. Mm-hmm. There was no pulmonary rehabilitation.
No.
There were no support groups.
I couldn't understand that there wasn't more out there. This is, again, 2003, 18 years ago. And so we started, you know, the the common walk type of awareness type of stuff. We had a walk that talked about pulmonary fibrosis, but also remembered of what one goes through being diagnosed with IPF, interstitial lung disease. And so doing something about it is very much of and finding that hope, but also finding that plan of how we can do something about this, do something about it. So that's where it all started, really, of moving forward. And then it just develops into much more incentive and initiatives of making sure that no family goes through what we've gone through as a family, as a patient, as a care partner, and anybody within the support network.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, one thing that interests me, and when I reflect on my own experience, is coping strategies. Mm-hmm. It's how we individually cope with the disease. Here mm-hmm. we are living with a progressive disease. It gets worse and worse in time. You become more and more debilitated. You end up at home on oxygen, perhaps. You know, it's really, you know, your world starts off wide and it's like
a get
funnel.
Isolated.
It becomes mm-hmm. smaller and you get isolated at mm-hmm. home. You know, the word disability, I didn't realize until after I'd had my trunk transplant. I suddenly thought, wow, I was actually disabled.
Right.
And I hadn't realized that. I just was living with the disease. Mm-hmm. But what strategies did you and your father use?
Back in 2003, I mean, we were trying to keep our head above water in terms of what to find out there as resources. We got connected with a support group, but it was only held quarterly. 11 months did not fulfill that, and he got very sick very fast. And the ways that we managed it is a lot of talking, as a family, parts of our family had a really hard time of seeing my dad go through this. Yeah. And so making sure that there's another level of support out there to talk to somebody. Yeah. And that's really important. And also, like I said, the support groups are very essential in this whole process. And finding that camaraderie, but also the education and supportive care.
Yeah. Monica, I mean, how do you cope? How do you stay hopeful?
It started in the beginning with the chaos. Mm-hmm. But in time, I learned things. I started an association and could talk to other people, could see other people surviving. And my husband was a caretaker. He searched for treatment, but some days was stressing because he was always asking me, "How are you? Mm-hmm. How are you? Mm-hmm. How are you?" Mm-hmm. So we started to just talk on Thursdays. "How are you on Thursdays?" Because I could rest and be Monica the rest of the week, and Monica with a diagnosis on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I chose not to tell anybody except my close family because I didn't want people coming up to me and saying, I didn't want people to identify me as that sick old guy.
Mm. No.
So yeah. Nobody knew until the very end that I was, or close to my end.
Mm-hmm. I recognize.
Which turned out to be a transplant. Mm. Recognize that. But Nojan, I mean, 20 years, how have you stayed optimistic? How have you managed to remain positive over that length?
I wasn't always that positive, but I do think I am a very driven person, but I also love life. I choose to live. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is very important, to find hobbies, but as we also said, a support system, but also to seek professional help for the mental health and to stay active in a way, even if it's difficult. And for me, my passion is singing. So, and it's also good for the lungs. What I also found interesting, I read something on the website and I found Ikigai. And it is about finding your purpose in life. And what's the reason that you want to go out of bed? And of course, love is very important. But to have to find something, like Monica also said, and it's you. Yeah, it's the passion, what drives you, what blossoms you, and what keeps you going.
Yeah.
And you have one life.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, do whatever it takes to try and stay positive.
Yes.
But you see, I mean, I think I can see it from a patient perspective. I know what my wife went through. You know, I didn't know until afterwards that she had, you know, in the evening, she'd go and cry. Sorry, I can't even say myself. On her own, you know. Didn't realize. You're so focused as a patient on just getting through the day that you often don't see what the family is going through. We don't realize what the wider impact is on our families and how difficult and hard it is for them. And I'll ask each of you, but Jen, you started talking about it just now.
Right. And it's exactly. It's the unique experience of a caregiver going through their, like we had talked about before, going through their own journey with their loved one. And making sure that the care partner has that support network. But it certainly is because you, not that you can't, it depends on your relationship with your loved one. But to talk about how you're feeling with your loved one of what everybody's experiencing day in, day out, medically, emotionally, et cetera, you are apprehensive to really have that conversation with your loved one because your loved one is going through so much already. So you have to be cognizant of that. And so find that support network for the care partner is very important.
Yeah, very, very important. Yeah. No, John, do you have anything to add on that? Or?
Yeah, for my parents, it was devastated, of course, when you have a daughter 22 years old and maybe going to die. And for my husband and I, it was, I don't know, maybe because it was 22. He was at that time 29. And somehow we were very positive. And we did what we could do, go out for some trips or maybe short walks or go to a movie. So we try to focus on the positive things. And about mental health, it was more like I put it on with professionals or support groups.
Yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. Monica, how about you?
Oh, we talked a lot, and then we started just talking Thursday. So my husband decided to go and talk to a professional. And I think that was a good idea. And then we started in the association to have caregivers meetings.
I wonder, patient organizations, you know, we've talked about it a little bit so far in the discussion, and each of you in your different ways has been involved in forming or running patient organizations. I mean, Monica, you've done an enormous amount in Sweden on this. I wonder, you know, I think back to when I was living with IPF. I didn't have the energy to do that. Well, I mean, I suppose I was kind of working, but, you know, I just wonder how you have the energy to and the determination to do that.
Oh, it was my first meeting with a doctor who gave me the diagnosis. I asked him what is going to happen, and he answered, I don't know. And I have been working in the school as a teacher for 40 years, and when a pupil say, I don't know, we often take a moment to ask ourselves, why don't we know? So I asked him, and I asked myself, why don't we know anything? And then I started to get angry. And that gave me some energy. And I used my knowledge of school for searching for things. And I used my energy for the not so positive part. And I wanted to go like a plow. I wanted to go first to have people not having the same problem as I had. I felt lonely. Now people don't need to feel lonely. They can go with us in the association. So I driven by a bit of anger. Yeah.
That's interesting because I was hardly involved in patient advocacy when I had the disease. But after my transplant, as I was recovering, you know, you have to do that quite slowly, I found myself becoming angry. I suddenly started saying, I'm angry about the way in which we're treated as pulmonary fibrosis patients. I was lucky. I had a very good hospital, very good medical staff. But I was, in a way, unique, not unique, but there were not many such places the majority of people living with disease didn't get that level of care. Mm-hmm. And then we would look at cancer patients. We have a worse prognosis than many cancer patients, and yet we get none of the treatment. We get there's no time-bound, you know, timeline to diagnosis and treatment mm-hmm. as there is for cancer patients. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not being treated equally, and that's what got me angry. So that's been keeping me motivated for 7 years now. So, but anyway, Nojana, sorry, over to you.
Now, the interesting part is when I got diagnosed, I thought, okay, how can I cope? How can I manage? Then I thought, okay, the loved ones, then the mental health, psychologist, to stay active, exercise, physiotherapist. And slowly I started going to support groups because I wanted to filter it. It was otherwise too much at the age of 22. Yeah. And then the first 5 years, it was just surviving. After that, it was 5 years of bucket list. So I did a lot of things. Well, okay, mm-hmm. that's a learn for a lesson, I guess. But and then afterwards, I thought, okay, what do I want to do? I am adopted from Indonesia. The healthcare system kept me alive in the Netherlands. How is it in Indonesia? So I kept Googling, and then I came in contact with people from around the world, Australia and Indonesia. And it was a Facebook group at the time initiated. And from that on, it took time. But then I thought, okay, there isn't much awareness. There isn't much knowledge. So I just went to a professor in the Netherlands at that time, Professor Frank van der Hoge. And he said, okay, let's collaborate. So, yeah, 2015, there was a seminar organized, and I went with my husband to Indonesia, Semarang. And in 2016, there was a foundation. I didn't initiate it, but it was done by Patricia Ayuningtyas, but unfortunately she had died. She passed away mm-hmm. because of the scleroderma, but it's still blossoming mm-hmm. in
That's
2023.
Great.
That's wonderful.
Really yeah.
Mm-hmm. And your own organization's in Sweden, Monica, there. How extensive is it now?
I have been working with guidelines for both diagnose and stem cells. Yes. So now everyone can point at the guidelines and say, I want this. Mm-hmm. Educated yeah. patients.
Mm-hmm. They demand their entitlement.
They want more.
Yeah. Mm. Very good. Yeah.
And we are getting more and more members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, both really interesting examples. Jen. Wesco Foundation for Pulmonary Fibrosis.
Yes. Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, as my dad succumbed to pulmonary fibrosis, and we had mentioned about starting, you know, an awareness event and having those conversations and trying to relate that to the public so that there is a conversation. Somebody has the symptoms, they can go to their GP or pulmonologist and look deeper. But it was a bit stagnant. And like you both had said, it takes a while to get your feet under you to understand, okay, this is what we need to do. And it was something that, you know, out of anger, out of, you know, this urgency to help others that, again, you don't want them to feel those feelings or be lost in navigating the disease. I felt literally compelled, pushed to really move forward, to make the steps in creating a nonprofit organization. You know, when we started our first support group in 2015, I met with a physician, a local physician. I said, this is what I really would like to do and have what we didn't have to some level. And, you know, he was right on board. And that's how really the ball started rolling and developing that and programming and just started accelerating after that and making sure that is a soft landing for patients to have those honest conversations. And even in the support group network, we all go through the process of being initially diagnosed, talking about lung transplant, talking about our care partners going through everything that one goes through. We have veterans living with ILD. You know, we got to make sure we fulfill that unmet need. And we have a group that is a grief group for, you know, we all become very, very close. And so when their loved one is gone, they have, again, a soft place to land. So, you know, we've developed these groups in a spectrum of unmet needs to meet those needs. From, like I said, initial diagnosis, care partners, veterans, grief. But we also have it's called Project Positivity. And it really developed over the COVID pandemic and trying to make sure the folks that we work with, patients, care partners, families, is have an afternoon, your Thursdays, but your six other days of laughing,
yeah,
telling stories about our grandchildren, children, what is our favorite food tomorrow? Actually, today is Friday. what day is it? Is Friday, and we have it today. Project of Positivity, and we talk about music, and we talk about music, and we literally laugh out loud. And so that quality of life coming into play is we want to keep on honing into, is that's really our goal,
yeah,
is have that quality of life. And so, yeah, so that's the pervasive.
It's interesting, all the support groups I've ever been to laugh.
Laugh. We yeah, laugh we have, all the
time.
It's
a characteristic of just to
we do
have a good time. Yeah. I mean, we all face this difficult futures, but it's the ability to love.
It's therapeutic. You
know, a friend of mine who sadly died a couple of years ago after living with IPF for 11 years, Malcolm, I said to him once, because he was very big in support groups, I said, what is it about support groups? And he said, you know what it is? It's that if you hold out your hand, somebody will hold it.
Yes.
And I thought, wow, that's just very, it's just what it says. That group of people will support you if you need it.
Yeah.
Looking to where we are now, we said a little while ago that when we started in this, there was nothing. We've now got more than nothing. We're doing quite well in some areas, not so well in other areas. It's great that we have the pharmaceutical industry looking seriously at our diseases, and I'm confident things will come. But for each of you, what gives you, when you look around you now, what gives you hope for the future? What about you, Monica?
What gives me hope is that there is happening so much in research, with doing things together, just having an association to be happy, try to be happy, give me, as you said, laughing Fridays. So if we can work together to have a better day, week, and Thursday.
Great, thank you, Monica. Bojana?
Hope. Maybe driven by hope, I don't know. But maybe it's also between my 18th and 20th, I had some mental issues because of my adoption. I met my biological mother. And then at the age of 22, I got sick. And back then, I wanted to die. And then diagnosed, maybe I'm going to die. And that's what gives me energy, not the anger, but okay, no, I just want to live. And that gave me kind of hope, but also knowing people who love you unconditionally. And the development in the research, it is amazing. But also to feel the energy, how all people work together and connect, share the knowledge, that also gives me energy and hope.
It's interesting what you said, Monica, because I think about whenever I talk to patient groups, they always say research. Now, research isn't going to benefit them as individuals. It's going to be the snowplow you talked about, pushing ahead, leaving space behind, which will be a better place to live than they have now. And that seems to be really gives hope to a lot of people. But sorry, Jen, I took your
No.
Over to you for your...
I'm going to add on to that.
Yeah.
That, you know, to be able to talk with patients and families about clinical trials, that there is hope, and there is definitely a sense of urgency that we wanted this and needed this yesterday, but understanding that it's a patient process and a long process, but as a patient and family, knowing part of that is altruistic, of looking to our future generations, and that one day we will find a cure. But until then, there are wonderful patient advocacies out there, there is a place to go to. There is always a safe landing.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's encouraged me, I think, it's really happened only in the last year or two. I've heard at various conferences and congresses, mm-hmm. doctors, the leading researchers, beginning to talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, we heard it today, the word stabilize, mm-hmm. but the word we use is stop mm-hmm. pulmonary fibrosis. Mm-hmm. Leo, we can... At the moment, we have drugs that will allow us to slow the path, slow the rate of descent or the rate of deterioration, mm-hmm. and possibly extend life by a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
But we need much more than that. We mm-hmm. need something that will actually stop the disease mm-hmm. in its tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're getting close.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like, hopefully, for me, hope would be if we could do that within the next 5 to 10 years.
Right.
That would be absolutely brilliant.
Wonderful.
Not for all patients, maybe, but for mm-hmm. some patients, mm-hmm. we manage to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm basically optimistic, and I gather in your different ways we all are, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Great. Okay, that's fine. So final word then for the podcast is about, okay, you can either talk to your 22-year-old self, Noorjahana, or imagine a patient being diagnosed for the first time with IPF or scleroderma or ILD or one of the other forms of pulmonary fibrosis.
Mm-hmm.
What message would you want to give to the newly diagnosed patient today? What have you learned?
I think literally breathe.
Okay.
Just breathe. And then make a plan, like the support groups, the hospital. I think, yeah. But also to learn that it's not the end. Most of the time,
mm-hmm.
because when you're diagnosed, newly diagnosed, I thought I was going to die, mm-hmm. and it was realistic,
mm-hmm.
statistically, but now 23 years later, I'm still here. So it's also important to find people who survive in a way, mm-hmm. and how to cope and to manage, how to deal with a disease.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Monica, what would your one point, your takeaway for newly diagnosed?
I learned from my first mistake. I Googled. I will say, do not Google.
Mm-hmm.
Look for association, or in my country, we have a state called Socialstyrelsen, and they have guidelines.
Mm.
Read them.
I think so. I think we now have various reliable sources of information from for scleroderma, for more generally for mm-hmm. pulmonary fibrosis. We've got the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation
mm-hmm.
in the US. We've got Action for Pulmonary Fibrosis in the UK,
mm-hmm.
the European Federation. I'm sure WESCO also has stuff on their website. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got lots of sources. Go there. Don't go to the
mm-hmm.
the Google. I think mm-hmm. that's a good mm-hmm. point.
Mm-hmm. And don't lose hope.
And don't lose hope.
Never lose hope.
Never
lose hope.
Yeah. And Jen, what would yours be?
So I think about this, and hope is a huge word. It's really a powerful word. And then I think of an action item that goes along with that. And we talked about this in our meetings before, is when you have hope, and we need hope, but what then is the plan? And that could range from anything that is helpful to you as an individual navigating the disease, and what that looks like is for you and beneficial for you. And I also think about to advocate for yourself and ask those questions. And when you have conversations with your healthcare providers, your pulmonologists, your rheumatologists, whomever, that you have these questions and continue that dialogue with them. And I think that's really important. And we talked a lot about patients and families and care partners being very well educated. That is a component in having those conversations. And even though we talk about our own, what we're dealing with, but it also strikes maybe something within that researcher, provider, that they acknowledge that and will then work with you or work with the patient or understand the urgency of all of this. And another part of it is I think of being mindful, of being very mindful of your life, the moments that you have a cool breeze on your face, how beautiful that is. Yeah. You know, of just the daily things that you don't always think of. You're washing dishes, ew, but you're washing dishes and you have the warm water on your hands. And you don't necessarily think of that, the sun on your face. But so I think of the mindful, be mindful of your life and the beautiful parts of your life.
And the balance in body, mind, and soul.
Body,
also.
Mind, and soul, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Enjoy every moment.
Enjoy every moment. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, it's great. Look, guys, thank you very much indeed. That's been a really very interesting discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've learned an awful lot from it, and I hope that the people listening to us today have. Great. In closing, then, I'd like to thank all my guests for sharing their bravery and their amazing stories with us tonight. I'd also like to thank Boehringer Ingelheim and the Journeys in Pulmonary Fibrosis team for making these podcasts, which are extremely interesting and informative for patients and carers around the world. If you enjoyed this episode, then there are many more episodes available. Please just go wherever you find your podcasts normally and look us up and you'll find them there. Oh, and if any of you would like to reach out to any of us tonight who have been on the podcast, we'd be very happy to respond to you. You can reach us through hello@boehringer-ingelheim.com. So that is boehringer-ingelheim.com. So thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you on another podcast. Thanks.